Thank you very much indeed. Diolch yn fawr iawn. What we're doing in this afternoon session is bringing a new set of people to you who are going to comment from the perspective of the opportunities and the potential challenges inside Swansea Bay City Region because they have a particular stake inside the region. So I'm really delighted to be joined for this session by Councillor Rob Stewart on my left, who is not only the leader of Swansea, but is the lead politician in the context of the Swansea Bay City Region Committee. So Rob will be able to give us an overview of the opportunities in that context. On my far right is David Jones, who is the project director for Marine Energy Wales. And of course, we've heard a lot this morning about the big opportunities in terms of marine energy. Over on my far left is Johan Jenkins, Development Director for Tidal Lagoon Power, who has been the person who has waited longest probably for a government decision on whether or not the really innovative technology that we all hope will come to Swansea Bay is delivered. And on my immediate right is Jill Kelleher, who is the Policy and Engagement Manager for Specific, an initiative run out of Swansea University with a range of partners and contributing to a big homes and power stations project as one of the key projects in the city deal. When Auriel introduced me, she said that I had been the Minister for Environment, Sustainability and Housing in the Welsh Government, and I had the privilege of that from 2007 to 2011. Which also means that like Calvin, but not over quite a long a time, I feel really battered by how long it takes to get things done. So some of you here are old enough to remember that in 2008 I published a document called The Low Carbon Revolution. And the one useful thing it did was started to put some targets in terms of, you know, what energy generation in Wales could look like. And I sat back and waited for companies to flow into Wales with a government that was really interested in delivering on renewable energy. And of course, waited to some extent in vain, because at that time, the energy powers that we had in Wales were 1 megawatt at sea, 50 megawatts at land, but delivered through the local authorities. So in a sense, we did not have a regulatory, even if we had a policy lever. So my waiting carried on, and then I looked at other ways of skinning this particular cat, and some of you will know about the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, and of course that now, in law, requires all public bodies in Wales to deliver prosperity through a low carbon framework and looking at the social, economic, environmental and cultural benefit for the communities of Wales. And along with the new Environment Act and the legislative targets there, there now is the start of a set of policy vehicles in Wales which will be essential in the contribution that the IWA and partnership will be able to take forward in the regulatory and policy frameworks. And can I congratulate all those who've been involved in the work so far? I was really excited listening to the presentation by Johnny Gowdy of the report this morning, because there are now detailed propositions against which the panelists who we'll hear from now will be able to say, there is the art of the possible there. A set of experts has been, and we like experts, by the way, a set of experts has looked at what can be done. We've just had breakout sessions that demonstrate both what can and can't be done. But now the big opportunity is to seize the day and say, now that we have those powers in Wales, 350 megawatts now, which is directly linked to the Tidal Lagoon, because I was put by the Welsh Government onto the Silk Commission, and I argued successfully there that a pilot project, a pathfinder project, should be in control of the Welsh Government, not of the UK Government. So the opportunities now are 7 times as big as they were 2 years ago, and we should have at least 7 times of that ambition. So in terms of taking that ambition forward, let me introduce the very ambitious Councillor Rob Stewart, leader of Swansea.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for that, Jane, and thank you for the work that you've done to move this agenda forward so dramatically. I was sitting at the back very quietly there listening to the feedback, and I think I was really encouraged on the fact that what we're actually proposing to do as part of the city deal and what that can enable matches very much with your ambitions that you've laid out today and the opportunities that you all have identified. I think it's worth remembering just a couple of facts to put the context of the city deal in terms of what we are talking about today. £1.3 billion, quantum of the city deal, biggest city deal in Wales. Nearly half of that associated with energy projects. And that really shows how focused we are in terms of making sure we can deliver a different energy future for the people in our region. Homes as power stations, as has been mentioned, is a significant project within City Deal. The four local authorities taking part in that have already delivered some housing projects, which are precursors towards homes as power stations. In Swansea, if you go up to Penderry Ward in to Milford Way, you will see the first new council houses built in a generation. And they have energy bills. They're built to passive house quality. Energy bills of less than £70 a year for the people who live in them. It was brilliant when the beast from the east came to visit us, and it was a minus 10 outside and a balmy 21 inside without any heating, which is fantastic. But what it also does, of course, you know, from a political point of view, it lifts those families out of fuel poverty because it removes significant energy bills from them, which they would otherwise struggle to pay. So really significant, and we'll shortly be going on to phase 2, 3, and 4 of our energy schemes, and that is happening across the region. And as was said, I think it was the business feedback group said, you know, in terms of why don't we become disruptive and look at battery storage. Well, that's absolutely what our friends at Specific and others are helping us to achieve as part of the homes as power stations. Because if you think about it, not only councils building at a large scale houses which are essentially off-grid, houses which generate all of their energy needs and then provide energy back to the grid. It allows us as an authority to generate a new income stream, but it also allows us to become extremely disruptive in the energy market because we won't need the energy that we currently consume from those sources, and of course it'll all be renewable sources of energy. In addition to that, you know, take the technology on a further step, and then we start to retrofit that to existing properties. Well, I don't know about all of you, but I'd certainly love to bin my energy bills as soon as I could. And if I could do that in a way where it allows us to get all of my energy needs from renewable sources and produce something back to the grid, fantastic. So that's the sort of the council drive to do this, and we will be moving on at a pace with that. And I said, you look at it, about £568 million is the value of the Homes as Energy Scheme.
Thank you, Rob. Just before I bring Jill in, can I just ask you about transport infrastructure? Because, you know, although transport infrastructure is not a specific project in the city deal, what happens on transport is a massive opportunity. And one of the challenges we were given this morning is actually public transport should be 100% renewable long before 2035. So I wondered if you just might say a word on that.
Yeah, and again, you know, you look at the city deal in Swansea Bay City region, it's very different from the Cardiff Capital city deal, where theirs is largely based on transport infrastructure, yeah, but not renewable transport infrastructure. And I think, you know, one of the things I've been consistently saying to people is just because there isn't a specific project in the city deal on transport doesn't mean that we're not going to be doing something significant on it. And at the most recent Swansea Bay City region, we've agreed to move transport planning and strategy in and align it to the city deal structures. And again, I absolutely agree with you, Jane. What we need is an overarching delivery plan for renewable transport across the region. That's taking into account not just the sort of day-to-day stuff like bus transport or public transport, but what do we do on air travel? Because air travel, yeah, again, needs to become sustainable and potentially move to the renewable sources of energy. what do we do with our ports, because we have a huge deep water ports around our region. And then, yes, I did hear people say that there are only 3 charging points in the region. That's not true. There are more than that. but I think, you know, investment in electric charging points, in hydrogen vehicle. Jane, you'll be aware that under the guise of the city deal and in our relations with China recently, we've signed a deal supporting River Simple to develop the hydrogen fuel cell further for incorporation into the next generation of Chinese vehicles. Now again, Swansea's the home to the fuel cell, as you know, but again, hydrogen vehicle and the infrastructure, and I think that's where the links with China will be able to help us in future, is how do you create a really effective hydrogen refueling network at a cost in the coming years. So transport's going to be hugely important. Andrea Lewis, I don't think she's here yet, but she was going to join me as the cabinet member in Swansea Council, charged with homes, energy and transport. And again, we are looking, as part of the redevelopment in the city centre, to make sure that we encourage not only electric charging points in all of our locations, but encourage businesses and support businesses to incorporate them as they develop the infrastructure around the city centre and around the region.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Jill, can we move on to you in terms of the really exciting specific project, which is wider than the homes and power stations, but you know, perhaps we can change the map in Wales.
Thanks, Jane. Yes, it's incredibly exciting. I'm thrilled to have been involved in the Pobble project, the flagship scheme there. So Specific is a national innovation and knowledge centre here in Wales, based out of Swansea University, and collaborates across industry with lots of other universities as well, looking at how you turn buildings into power stations using integrated renewable technology. What's incredibly exciting is it starts to optimise the benefits of energy efficiency at source from a building. And when you start to do that, you change the economics of that building. So Pobble, you know, have invested their own energy and passion in turning, you know, buildings into power stations with the flagship scheme at Neath Port Talbot. And what it means is they're looking at how they turn 16 properties into homes that design out fuel poverty by optimising that energy efficiency. And off the back of that, that started to show the industry what you could do if you turn your buildings into power stations. At Specific, we work through our demonstrator projects to show what's possible when you pilot and demonstrate the impossible. And we're actually seeing demand, which I think is incredibly important and exciting. The last 10 years, I've been sort of actively lobbying for better energy efficiencies of buildings, of homes, and to unlock that. And we start to see that because of the price of renewable and how you integrate your PV and your storage and what that means for future economies. So for me, the whole Swansea City deal is an incredible journey and exciting opportunity that we can all engage in. I was explaining to my 17-year-old daughter what I was doing today. And I said, you know, we're looking at how we can get to 2035, harness the power of renewable technology. Mum, why are you waiting until 2035? You know, we need to do this now, you know. We know that we're on a journey, but we can do it now. So that's what we're doing with the Neath project at Pobble. We're showing you what you can win. And then this is, you know, you can design out fuel poverty. That, for me, is just, well, incredible.
Jill, thank you. I think one of the key aspects of this city deal here is at the table with the 4 local authority partners are the 2 universities and the 2 health boards. And I think that interrelationship between the opportunity of universities to do research and test and pilot is actually particularly important in this context. But Jill, you'll be fully aware as well that the largest number of houses in Wales, of course, are not new. And so there's a huge challenge that was outlined very clearly this morning, 200,000 houses needing to be retrofitted. Can the work you're doing have a read over onto that too?
Absolutely. You know, we have to. We have over 26 million homes in the UK. I think it's something like 1 a minute we're supposed to have retrofitted. We should have started that a few years ago. So, you know, we have the technologies now to start to look at how you can model in different applications and technologies into those buildings. But what's unique now as well is obviously, you can actually start to model and design and look at buildings without actually doing anything for real because of the technologies we have at the moment. So you can actually look at the impacts of what the technology that's coming through can do to that building stock. So we just need to look at different technologies for different applications for different buildings because, you know, you might have a solid wall, you might have a hard street cavity wall, you know, how do you tackle these buildings and kind of what, you know, what do you want to achieve from those technologies and at what cost?
Right. Jill, thanks. David, if I can come to you now, because you know, Rob was saying 50% of the projects are energy focused, and of course marine energy is a key part of the Swansea Bale City deal agenda. David, what are the big opportunities and challenges in terms of taking this forward?
Thanks, Jane. I think you've already mentioned the raft of policies that Welsh Government have been putting together, which are, you know, incredibly supportive at a Welsh level. I think the Marine Plan also, to add to that list, really does provide us with an opportunity. And first to say as well, I think that, you know, that raft of policies has been backed up with structural funding as well. So I think 100 million euros of structural funding for marine energy in 2014 was a game changer. I think it was the largest allocation for marine energy across the member states. So, you know, I think it's a real statement of intent, and that's, you know, it started to have a real positive effect on peripheral economies and supply chain resilience and clustering and all of those things that, you know, I think marine energy is having a benefit. If you're going to measure us on kilowatts created, then that's probably not so good at the moment. But in terms of, you know, I think we're up to 130 jobs created in the last 2 years for marine energy in Wales. They're direct jobs as well. That doesn't include the supply chain. So, you know, there's lots and lots of positive stuff going on. In terms of Pembroke Dock Marine, it's four pillars in that project. Pembroke Dock infrastructure, so to update the infrastructure at the port in terms of getting that ready for renewable energy projects moving forward. We've got the Pembrokeshire demonstration zone as well, which is now, I'm pleased to say, as well, being steered towards considering floating offshore wind. I think we've talked about offshore wind and the opportunities that that's brought to the East Coast. And then there's a UK Catapult Marine Energy Engineering Centre of Excellence, which is never very easy to say. MEES is much, much easier to say in terms of acronyms. And then the one we're directly involved in is the marine energy test areas within the Haven as well. And I think, you know, that project is about driving down the costs of energy, which is where we need to be in terms of the challenge. I think engineering, you know, we have to lower the cost of energy, but I think the biggest and foremost challenge probably lies at the door of UK government at the moment in terms of revenue support. There isn't one for marine energy, really. I'm sure Johan will probably build on this story as well in terms of revenue support. So, you know, it's great that we've got all of this positive policy support at a Welsh government level, but I think, you know, I guess in the short to medium term, if we don't have meaningful revenue support at a UK level, then it's going to have I think that's the biggest significant challenge that the sector's facing at the moment.
No, thanks for that. I mean, I think it is probably instructive to look back at the timeline on projects in Wales, just in a sense to note where we are coming from. I'm a shareholder in Awel Aman Tawe, the local community wind farm in Neath and Port Talbot that actually has got the largest kilowattage of the community projects in Wales. And I've kind of remembered it at about 14 years, but my ex-colleague from the Welsh Government tells me it's 17 years for a community wind farm to get from idea into delivery. Now, when we're talking about the kind of step change that we're looking at in the context of 2035, and where we know, and has been articulated twice today, about how we respond to the Paris climate change targets, then actually we have got to really change the frame on this. So what would you say the revenue element, but in a sense, in the context of marine energy, I think what I tried to put in the water in 2011 didn't get in until 2014. So what are the big game changers in the context of renewable energy from the marine perspective?
I think, you know, again, talking about challenges first, there's you know, because it's a new industry and it is generally by its nature, marine resource tends to be very sensitive areas. So if you think about Tidal Energy Limited going into Ramsey Sound, you know, resident population of Harbour Porpoise. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty around project consenting. So I think, you know, that obviously to prove that there is a sustainable future for marine energy, we've got to get kit in the water, basically. I think that's happening now. And I think Johnny mentioned this morning the Major M projects and how Scotland are moving forward with deploying pieces of kit. But yeah, I guess there's, you know, there are consenting risks, and we want to make sure it's done sustainably, for sure. And I just think, you know, going back to that, I think as a marine energy sector, we've almost stopped talking about climate change, probably driven by the messaging from Bays. And, you know, it should be about supporting peripheral economies and supply chain resilience and clustering and all of those type of things, which it does do. But I just think, you know, wider, and I guess this is looking at it with through blue eyes, you know, and perhaps naively, we do live on planet ocean. And I think if we're going to meaningfully decarbonize, then we, you know, to not tap into the energy from the sea seems nonsensical to me personally. So I think, you know, it's something that we have to keep pushing forward with.
David, thank you very much. I think that seeds nicely to our final speaker. Before we ask you to participate as well, Johan Jenkins from the Tidal Lagoon, because the, both in the context of the industrial strategy and the supply chain economy, the Tidal Lagoon has tried to incorporate that in its thinking as well. Johan.
Like you, Jane, I've been reflecting on milestones and timelines, and I just have to remind myself it's June 2015 that we achieved consent to build Swansea Bay Tidal Lagoon. In fact, it was 10 to 4. I remember getting the call and then a flurry of excitement, press and media all over the place. And it's also about 18 months since Charles Henry, UK's government's energy expert, made his recommendations or published his recommendations in terms of that work he did on behalf of UK government. And his response was very, very clear and very positive in that he said it's a no-regrets decision to build Swansea Bay Tidal Lagoon, but it's still just about 18 months. And it's been a hugely frustrating time. But we remain positive. What it has done is galvanized the region. We've had fantastic support and continue to have fantastic support from Rob here as leader of Swansea Council, but also as the lead of the city region. But we haven't been standing idle or sitting idle. We're determined, as you know, I'm sure, to build a series of lagoons, as well as achieving consent to build Swansea, as well as getting those fantastic comments back from Charles Henry. Then we've been progressing other lagoons, particularly in Wales. We've done some early scoping. We've probably spent 10, 12 million on the Cardiff Lagoon. Much of that around environmental scoping, some preliminary engineering works, and look, there are no red flags. We've achieved consent to get into the grid. So we do honestly believe that there's an opportunity to develop a new industry in the UK. We've said almost from day one that we want to center that opportunity here within the Swansea Bay City region. One of the flagship buildings that we wanted to build and will build is the turbine manufacturing plant. Following a tender process, we identified Swansea Docks as being the location of that building that will employ about, well, on the contractor side, probably 100 well-paid, sustainable jobs. But for us, we'll be attaching to that an office which will become Tidal Lagoon headquarters, where we'll have 150 desks. That work in terms of tendering that opportunity has been ongoing, and probably for 3 months we've basically achieved preferred bidder status. We've identified the company that will build that with us and for us, and excitingly that's a local company that fulfilling our ambition of spending 50% of the capex of Swansea in Wales and 60% in the UK. Along that journey, Welsh Government have been fantastic in their support. Probably 2 years ago, they commissioned a report in terms of the economic benefits for Wales. They've identified something like 2,500 jobs on Cardiff, direct jobs. And then we commissioned those same consultants using the same methodology to look at Cardiff, Newport and Colwyn Bay. Cardiff's coming in at about 11,000 direct jobs. Colwyn Bay's coming in at 14,000 direct jobs. Because it's most important to us and the region that these opportunities become sustainable. And they are well paid. And we've been working closely with EFI and HE to ensure we've got the right people with the right skills at the right time, because that supply chain is absolutely critical. So we do believe that particularly now recently with the Welsh Government's financial commitment, whether it's in terms of a loan or whether it's in terms of equity share, that's taken the discussion to the highest level, that's FMPM level. We believe that the time is getting close to a positive decision so we can start delivering what just about everybody wants to see. We've done a lot of talking, we've done a lot of planning, but surely now it's a time of actually delivering, and we look forward to doing that.
Ewan, thanks very much. I think one of the things that interested me in the early stages of the Tidal Lagoon was the way you engage with the public, because a number of people have identified that if you do energy to people, you're almost going to set up a negative response. But if you do energy with people, particularly if people really understand what the project is and the benefits locally, so the benefits, the economic and other benefits in Swansea, then you get a more positive response. And I think that it would be true to say that, you know, when I made a comment for the New York Times on the Tidal Lagoon, the question from the journalist was, how did they do it? How have they got so many people on side? Because that journalist had never seen more people on side for a renewable energy project than he found in that context. So what was different about what Tidal Lagoon did in that context?
Well, the vision that you see, and have seen for a number of years, isn't necessarily Swansea Bay's Tidal Lagoon's vision as a company. It's a vision developed by the stakeholders that we engage with. So it's a shared vision. Before getting to that formal consenting process, we did about 2 years' work, I think, with various stakeholders to understand what their aspirations and what they would like to see in the Swansea Bay area. After all, it's a beautiful spot. Swansea's my hometown, and I don't think it was a mistake that Mark asked me to join the team. My background is mining. I did 17 years in the mining industry. But this is my hometown. It's where I used to come on holiday from the Almond Valley, big distance then. and where I used to spend most of my Saturday nights, in truth. So we built a team of local people who understood the local issues, the local opportunities, and could interact easily with the local people. Our chief executive, Mark Shorrock, is hugely an inspiring person. Massive ambition, works at a tremendous pace, but he's got the community at the heart of everything that he does. So those values cut across the team, and I dare say that it's very humbling when you hear comments like you've just made, Jane. But it's those values that have got us to where we are today. And I remember, I'll never forget when Charles Henry and his team of maybe five civil servants, day one we had breakfast at the Village Hotel, and Jane was with us at breakfast because she couldn't make the sessions thereafter. Then from there, I think it was to the Bay campus. We had academics, we had local stakeholders, we had local investors, all available to share their views with Charles and his team. And I think we went out on a boat, we went up the docks, and then we jumped in the bus, and then we went to meet representatives from Swansea Council, Leith Port Talbot, Carmarthen and Pembroke. And as we pulled up, the leader of the council, Rob, was on the steps of Bronwyn Hall waiting to welcome Charles Henry. And I think in Charles's report, he said something like, I've rarely seen such an appetite or support for such a project. But that's the journey that we've taken together. The vision that we had was to develop something for the community. To do that, we needed to and wanted to engage with the community. And I think, Jane, that's why we've achieved together what we have.
Okay, thanks. And Rob, I mean, you've been instrumental in aligning this with the city deal as well, just to be absolutely clear.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're all frustrated that it's taken this long to get a formal decision out of government. And, you know, we've done a lot of thinking at city regional level to make sure that when we get a decision, we're able to move as quickly as possible to get this project, fantastic project, underway and to support Yeovil and Tidal Bay Power as much as we can. So there is already a formal decision of Swansea Bay City Region to align the Tidal Lagoon project to the city deal, should we get the approval. And that would, in a sense, I mean, I'm pinching Jane's quote here, it would double the deal, because what we end up then is a total quantum of a city deal project, which is close to 2.6 billion. Yeah. And that is truly transformational for the region.
Okay, well, can I just ask you to hold in mind that for the end of the session, I'm just going to ask you on a quick fire round, just before we finish, and Oriel tells me when that will be. I'm just going to ask you what you think is the biggest opportunity in terms of moving forward in Swansea Bay City Region. And Yeovil, I'm telling you now, you can't say Tidal Lagoon, because we'll assume that anyway. We all, you know,
can I say
something
Swansea
that doubles the city deal. Something that doubles the city deal. Now, we've got microphones. We've got 15 minutes, so now over to you. There's a hand up there. Can we have that as the first question?
Thank you. Hello. I have a question to ask, but it's in relation to a point of information which I think will interest the panel and everybody here today. I'm not sure whether it was Jane or Jill that mentioned the need to upgrade 200,000 homes in Wales. 200,000? One of you two. Yeah. So Jill. In Swansea. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that 24 hours ago, Lord Deben, Climate Change Committee, Selwyn Lloyd to some people, told the Energy and Climate Change Committee of the Welsh Assembly, I don't know if Simon Thomas is still in here, but he was present there, that the programme to insulate solid wall homes had not produced the benefits expected, and to actually quote, it had been misassessed. And also, the consequence of this is there's no point in continuing the way they were unless and until there's a change of process. So I'd be interested to know what your views are on that fact. This was 24 hours ago. Thank you.
I think the comment in terms of the 200,000 was directly from the report, in the context of those number of homes will need to move from currently where they are between D to G in energy efficiency levels. 60% of them will need to move from D to G to A to C. Now, the opportunity for the region is how they do that. It's not talking about an individual piece of work in the context of Welsh Government or anything else. It's what will need to happen in terms of that increased energy efficiency. Would you like to comment, Jill? I think you're the most appropriate one on the panel.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Obviously, there's some critical issues around energy efficiency that have to be taken across the whole of the sector as well, in terms of, first of all, there's big finance issues and options, but also about compliance. And actually, so you've mentioned solid wall. Again, it's how you actually, which products go for which application in that particular regard. There's been a lot of work done certainly over the last couple of years around actually how you look at the issue around compliance of how you tackle energy efficiency and the stock. And that's been headed up under, I think it was the Bonfield Review. So certainly in terms of how we insulate our existing stock going forward, it's basically how you actually assess it in the most appropriate way, and then what measures you would then put in, and then who actually does those measures. I can talk to you after about that as well, if you like.
Okay, over there, please.
Richard. Okay. Richard Essex, one to the men and one to the women, and it's not a gender issue. In terms of the men, how far do you worry about the fact that politically in the UK at the moment, everything is taken up with Brexit and very little else is done? It just worries me that this thing about the lagoon is just going to go on and on and on. I hope you can give me some optimistic replies. The second one is to mainly to Jill, but Jane might want to contribute. The one thing that Wales has been very good at over the years is producing can-do toolkits. And in terms of retrofitting existing homes, it would be very useful to have that kind of model to help people undertake that, even if they have to pay for it.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Yep, I think Rob on Brexit.
Well, being somebody who wants to remain in the European Union, I'm not very positive on Brexit at all. But you are right to point out there has been a bit of paralysis, really, at government level in terms of Brexit is so big that it is taking up a huge amount of time across government. So that is clear. That shouldn't interfere with a decision on Tidal Lagoon, though. You know, my understanding is that it's come close to a decision several times, but nobody's actually pressed the button, and that's what we need to happen in the next few weeks. Or, you know, I'm quite happy to work with Welsh Government or whoever else to see if we can try and unlock this another way. But at the moment, we urge the UK government to give it the time it needs and to get a decision out to us.
Okay. Any other comments on Brexit?
Not sure if it's, I have the fortune or misfortune to be involved in a Coast and Seas Brexit group, and I find it one of the most depressing meetings every single month. Which is, I guess, one of the opportunities it is driving at the moment, if I can bring an opportunity out of it, is actually driving collaboration. An example of that is we're about to, well, later this year, we'll be signing an MOU with Sweden. In terms of helping develop marine energy. We've also got one in the process with Brittany as well. A little bit wider than that, Canada, and also, believe it or not, talking to the Department of Energy in the USA as well. And even under the Trump administration, they've managed to secure 60 or 70 million for marine energy in America. So if there's things I can cling to, it'd probably be those.
And I think there can be a theme about learning from best practice elsewhere. That we should be picking up irrespective of Brexit. As a previous minister, I'm not sure we always looked outward enough in terms of best practice across the world. And so it'd be really good if one thing we can do in the Swansea Bay City region is really look for best practice and look at those opportunities to bring the best practice and the innovators as investors in the economy in Wales alongside it. But a can-do toolkit, I mean, that sounds really attractive. Will that work?
Absolutely, we can do it. So obviously compliance, and again, just the whole skills agenda is massive across the whole of the construction industry. It's not just isolated to the construction industry, there's issues in the energy industry, there's issues around skills and capacity moving forward for our future generations, our older generations, and how we actually skill up for the clean tech, the new tech world. So there's a massive can-do approach, an appetite, you know, from industry and apprenticeships and everything else to look at actually how you can build the skills we need moving forward. And certainly Welsh Government, you know, have been looking at this, and there's been the Welsh Assembly have done a review around housing as well and what needs to change in those industries. We're still very much sort of aligned to silo mentality, but moving forward, because of the nature of technologies and where we're going, we need all manner of skill sets to start to come together. And again, how we actually gear up for the future, I think it's a huge opportunity, you know, how we move forward.
Okay, so you've heard it here. There will be a can-do cult toolkit. Well, I hope there are, in fact, a range of can-do toolkits as a result of the project delivery through the Swansea Bay City region. Next question. I think we've got one there.
Yeah, it's Dave Club again. since we're in a room full of massive supporters of a very sustainable Swansea-based city region, I thought it would be a fabulous opportunity for Rob to kind of endorse the IWA report as official target for Swansea-based city region or for the council, and then to commit to having a delivery plan. It's a brilliant opportunity. I don't know what you think, Rob.
Sorry, David, have you missed the bit where Swansea Bay City Region is a collaboration of four local authorities,
no, Rob's
two
got
universities, two health boards, and we're still waiting for the sign-off from the UK and Welsh government?
Yeah, Rob. But I mean, Rob's got so much influence, I'm sure he could swing it.
Yeah. Look, I haven't seen the report in detail yet, which I'm aiming to do this evening to have a read through of it. But certainly, from what I know of it, it is complete. It seems to be completely aligned with what we're trying to achieve in the Swansea Bay City region. So, following consultation with my fellow leaders and my partners, I'm sure we can come to a point where we will be able to come up with a very supportive statement around the work that the IWA have done.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. We've got somebody who wants to come in again who's already spoken. Is there anybody else who wants to ask questions? We've got time for two more questions. Please, over there.
If I can put the devil's advocate question. There is, of course, within Wales, a sort of uniform enthusiasm for the tidal lagoon. But you'll know that there are equally strong voices against the tidal lagoon in terms of its cost and the technology. I suppose maybe this is a question really for the politician. If we get this wrong, the reputational damage to Wales in terms of its green infrastructure and green projects could be very severe. So what work has been done to ensure that the lagoon is not the emperor's new clothes?
Okay. Rob? Yeah, more than happy to answer that one. Yes, I mean, well, first of all, you've got the Henry report, which clearly tells you it's not emperor's new clothes. There are other independent reports which are in existence, which also support that. Again, I think, from my personal view, I think some of the statements made by those in London have been pretty disingenuous and inaccurate. And again, you know, any project of this scale has and will need a huge amount of due diligence done to it. You know, you're not going to get institutional investors and others providing millions or billions of pounds without that due diligence. So I'm quite confident that a huge amount of work has been done and the project has not been found wanting. Okay, it is a deliverable project. The technology is proven, and I think the funding mechanism, as long as it's done over the right period and in the right way, will deliver the sorts of energy prices that we need to be competitive. So I'm quite secure in that, and if that isn't enough, I'm sure there's more. Well, I can tell you there's more information coming to the public domain in due course that will help underline that.
Thank you. One last quick question then. Yes, please.
Thank you. A government reshuffle, and there could be effects to do with Swansea Bay Tidal Lagoon there. For example, Mr. Jenkins, I can't see your first name.
Can we just have a really quick question, please?
The Charles Hendry said about no regrets, but he also gave six or seven provisos or conditions in which he was saying it, and one of them was that he was recommending the Tidal Lagoon as long as the government didn't go ahead with carbon capture and storage. Would you like to comment on that fact? And the reason I'm making a connection with a reshuffle is Amber Rudd, when she was Climate Change, Energy and Climate Change, she stopped £1 billion, which is comparable in price to the Tidal Lagoon. Two projects,
okay,
competition
can we just,
going ahead.
The question is carbon capture and storage.
Right. In other words, it depends on it.
Thank you, because we're right at the end. Thank you.
I'm not sure I understood the question, really. No, what was the question? About 16 months ago, yeah. Do I see the reshuffle after today affecting the result of or the outcome of yes or no for Swansea Bay Tidal Lagoon?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the reshuffle has already taken place.
Yep.
And Sanjeev Javed has taken the position of Amber Rudd. Amber Rudd was in position when we achieved consent. But look, nobody in this room can predict what's going to happen tomorrow. We're just going to have to wait and see. But I'll go back to my initial statement, which is we are confident that a decision is imminent.
Okay, there's in the final couple of moments, I just want each member of the panel to say, literally in 30 seconds, what they think is the biggest opportunity in terms of what they've heard today in the context of delivery of renewable energy in Swansea Bay. David.
I think collaboration across communities, industries, public sectors, and across the region as well, and to build an economy driven by a low-carbon agenda. I think that's the biggest opportunity that we have.
Directly linked to prosperity and the Wellbeing Future Generations Act. Jill.
It's people. I think we have to look at the technologies we have, how we model them, and look at that wider social and economic impact of, you know, what are the jobs of the future and what skills do the people need to use those technologies and deliver that sustainable development for the whole of Wales.
And so engagement with people around the big agenda for the future. Johan?
I'm not supposed to mention the lagoon, am I?
No.
But together with that project we're looking to build, and with the city deal, we often hear it that between them they will be transformational. I don't think they'll be transformational. I think they'll be historical, because it will go down in history what we will start to deliver for decades to come. It will be a huge shift for this part of the world.
Right, okay, and last word to Rob. You may not be alone in leading the city deal and be able to respond on behalf of all of it, but you have a hugely important role, particularly here in this city, in actually driving the agenda we've described today forward. Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, Jane. For me, this is about a transformational economy opportunity. It's once in a generation. I think we've got, it's almost like the stars are aligning, you know. We've got the technologies, we've got the people, we've got the innovation, and it's all coming together. And look, we can be a truly world leader in terms of the next generation of green infrastructure. And I would love for us to become an entirely renewable, reliable nation in the next 10 years or so. And I think it's within our grasp, because Wales can do this, and certainly Southwest Wales can do this.
Thank you very much, diolch yn fawr iawn. We heard earlier from Xi about the range of reports that are in this very, very important re-energising Wales work. And what happens in Swansea Bay is not going to happen in Swansea Bay on its own, but there is a huge opportunity for Swansea Bay to take the lead. So I hope that all those in the room, if they've got ideas about how that can happen, will feed them in to the IWA as it moves on to its next elements in economic impact, social and community issues and ownership, regulatory and political levers, and its final report. Thank you very much. Over to you, Oriol.